Well, how about that first reading, huh? Quite a dandy. It's got to be one of the most shocking and thoroughly evil passages in the whole Bible. Kind of makes your skin crawl, right? These wicked men. And it's proof that cancel culture is not a new phenomenon. It kind of predates us by a few thousand years. Notice how these wicked people look at a very good and totally just man who has done nothing wrong. This just man prefigures Jesus Christ, of course. They actually acknowledge that what he's doing is right and that they are in the wrong. They admit it. And yet they have nothing but contempt and hatred for him and for God, because he trusts in God and therefore is obnoxious to them, making them uncomfortable. Let us see whether his words be true, they sneer. Let us find out what will happen to him. With revilement and torture, let us put him to the test, that we may have proof of his gentleness and try his patience. Let us condemn him to a shameful death and see if God will really stand by him. Wow, such terrible wickedness, right? Heaped upon such an upstanding man. There's a great injustice here. To varying degrees, people have always sought to cancel out and eliminate people who threaten their comfort zones, their power, their wealth, their privilege and prestige. And today we see this in shocking ways too. Just look at all the censorship that we have going on here. It's not all digital, but a lot of it is taking place there. There's a lot of manipulation of information. Maybe you only get half the truth, or maybe you get something that isn't quite true. You don't get the full picture oftentimes. There's so many obvious and convenient contradictions. People will say, oh, this is wildly unacceptable over here. But on the other hand, they're doing the same thing over here. No, it's fine here, because we're involved with it here. Our people that we don't like are involved with it over here. Persecution of religious beliefs. We see this increasing, and there's a blatant anti-Christianity, especially anti-Catholicism, is on the rise in today's world, especially in the United States here. All of this is fueled in large part by a toxic mix of godless atheistic philosophies that may sound good on the surface, some good ideals, but have never really amounted to any good. In particular, I have in mind four philosophers here. We have Karl Marx, Friedrich Nietzsche, Jean-Paul Sartre, and Michel Foucault. Their philosophies, a mix of them, are on full display in our world today. To my knowledge, none of these men was particularly happy. As a matter of fact, as far as I know, they were all pretty miserable, and none truly flourished. Perhaps this is why their philosophies are so sour and so dour. They're looking at a world, they're observing problems. There's nothing wrong with that, but their reaction to it is a little bit less than wonderful. And they're not exactly model citizens. They're not moral exemplars, nothing along these lines. Yet, their ideas are rampant now, even though the results of these philosophies have been obviously catastrophic. We just take a quick glance at, you know, the previous century. You look at the philosophy of Karl Marx. He famously says, okay, you have the oppressed, and then you have the oppressors. And there's always going to be tension until there's going to be a violent upheaval. The oppressed are going to overtake the oppressors. And then utopia is going to happen. Everything's going to be equal. All the wealth is going to be distributed. It's just going to be sunshine and lollipops. Well, that has never happened. A lot of people have tried it, but it's never happened. As a matter of fact, it's failed catastrophically. Look at Stalin. Oh, you got to crack a few eggs to make an omelet. Well, he cracked about 20 million of his own eggs, of Russian people. I don't know how many omelets he made, but disaster, right? You look at Hitler, you look at Mao in China, you look at Cambodia, you look at Vietnam, you look at North Korea. The list goes on and on and on. People seem to think, well, if we try it here, it's going to be different here. It doesn't work out. Marx didn't want it to end that way, but that's what happens. Now, Friedrich Nietzsche, so this guy, he famously said, God is dead. He's the guy that coined that phrase, and we killed him, Nietzsche says. He's another guy that was quite miserable, and he comes up with this Übermensch is the word in German, and that means the strong man. So we have Superman today. A lot of our superheroes are kind of loosely based on this Übermensch. But basically what it means is might makes right. Whoever has the power legislates morality, legislates everything. Whoever has the power, they rule. If you're not in power, tough luck. That's just the way it is. That's the way life is. So that's Nietzsche's big idea. And then Jean-Paul Sartre. All these guys are atheists. And so Sartre, even though he's an atheist, he believes in hell. And guess what he says hell is? Hell is other people. That's part of Sartre's philosophy. Pretty cheery stuff, right? And he really ushered in this whole concept of I create myself. So me, I was born into an Irish Catholic family. Obviously, you know, I'm white, I'm bald on top, you know, all these kind of things. But if I decide I'm otherwise, if I decide, no, I'm not from an Irish Catholic family, I'm from a Syrian family, or I'm Icelandic, or, you know, whatever, okay, that's fine. If I decide I don't want to be a man anymore, okay, well, no worries, whatever you think. Sartre really ushered in this whole concept of, it doesn't matter what I was born into, it matters what I think and who I want to be. And then Foucault comes about and he kind of brings all of these together and presents them in a way that, and he's the most contemporary of these four philosophers. He's the one that really kind of helped usher it in to our society today. Now, just to give credit where credit's due, Bishop Barron, I'm relying on him. I've read a little bit about these guys, but he's really steeped in them. And so I want to give him credit for helping me along here. Now, those espousing these philosophies now, what they try to do is hide the full reality. They don't want you to look back and see all the bodies piled up. 100 million people died because of Marxism in the last century. They don't want you to see that. So they're going to use different terminology. They're not going to call it Marxism. They're not going to call it communism because we're going to say, oh, that's bad. So they call it something else. Distancing themselves from the horrors of the past and trying to recreate history. They don't want you to go back and look and see what really happened. But even a quick look around betrays the ugly truth. People are simply using these philosophies and the ideologies that flow from them for their own benefit, to build themselves up at great expense to others. That's what's always happened with these things, but we see it now. It's packaged a little bit differently. Meanwhile, society becomes increasingly divided, and anxiety and fears and anger flourish. It's almost like today, if you're not angry and you're not on social media, you have a sign and you're really mad at somebody, if something's wrong, if you're not really upset, right? It almost seems that way. This isn't the way our Savior wants us to live. That's not how we were made to live. So a quick look at today's second reading also betrays this same truth. Here, St. James helps us to better understand how such wickedness comes about and how to fight back. Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every foul practice. Now, if we're honest, we all have a little bit of jealousy and selfish ambition in there somewhere, and to varying degrees in our lives. And it does. It brings about foul practices. In other words, what James is saying here is the more people are focused on themselves, the more they're going to willingly take advantage of others for their own gain. Because it's all about me. Not about other people. Well, I matter the most. And remember, Sartre, hell is other people, so it's all about me. James continues, where do the wars and the conflicts among you come from? Is it not from your own passions? Yes, it is, the quick answer. The more people become enslaved to their passions, the more they enter into a sad state of grasping desperately for things that never truly satisfy. You want more money, you want more sex, you want more this, you want more that. But it never satisfies. The only one that satisfies is our Lord. You covet, but you do not possess. You kill and envy, but you cannot obtain. You ask, but you do not receive, because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. That's it. That's what happens when you're chasing after all these passions. You never get to the end that you're seeking. Clearly, there's no wisdom in this at all, only foolishness. But, James teaches, wisdom from above, as compared to these worldly wisdoms and philosophies, wisdom from above is first of all pure, then peaceable, gentle, compliant, full of mercy and good fruits. Now that's more like it, right? That's what we're seeking. That's what our hearts are yearning for. That's the kind of world we want to live in. You're not going to get there with these worldly philosophies. Today's gospel passage illustrates that this teaching of James definitely comes from Christ. That's where we want our philosophy to be, in and through Christ. James was likely among those disciples who were arguing about who was going to be the greatest. That we heard that in the gospel passage. So Christ knows this is going on. He lets them do a little bit of discussion. Then he jumps in and shows them the folly of such worldly ambitions. Worldly philosophies, we might say, wisdom. If anyone wishes to be first, he shall be the last of all and the servant of all. So, being simple, humble, and trusting, like a child, that's the key. Not trying to be the ubermensch, but being simple, humble, and trusting like a child. That's the key to walking with Christ and to inheriting the kingdom he has prepared for you. This is the only way to open yourself up to drink in, receive the great riches he's offering you, just like he did in opening up to receive from the Father, like a son to the Father. He is the just one from the first reading, the one who suffered and died, yes, but then rose again from the dead. And he did it all for you, so that you might take what's good in this world and live it in and through him. No doubt, it is often hard to determine the right path and to walk this right path amidst so much noise and confusion in our world today. But if you walk the path of ongoing conversion, and we talk a lot about the three-legged stool, right? That's how we walk this path. Sacraments, first and foremost, daily prayer, and then service to our brothers and sisters. Evangelization, that's the three-legged stool. That leads us on this path of ongoing conversion. Then Christ will increasingly become your guiding light. Then, even amidst the inevitable resistance that you will encounter, you will be increasingly filled with his peace and joy. Not with anger and anxiety and fear, with his peace and joy. And you'll live in the freedom of the children of God. So, brothers and sisters, be not afraid. Don't be intimidated by the loud voices and by the bullies out there, the cyber bullies, or even if they're in the flesh, whatever. And don't fall in line with the wisdom of the world. There's good kernels of wisdom out there, but it has to go through Christ in order to be redeemed. You weren't created to live this way, this anger, this fear. Nobody's created to live that way. As Pope Benedict XVI famously said, you weren't created for comfort, to just seek the comforts of the world. You were created for greatness. For greatness. You were created to flourish in God's love and offer true solutions to the world's problems through his grace. So, friends, leave your darkness behind and start living life to the full.